Hello, I'm Fred Stella, president of the Interfaith Dialogue Association. Welcome to another edition of Common Threads. Last week, we began our conversation with Ruxana Haseeb. She is a survivor of the civil war between what was then East Pakistan and West Pakistan. East Pakistan today is, of course, Bangladesh. And we're going to talk about the role that religion and culture has played in this division and the extremism that is happening in Bangladesh. A little bit about Ruxana. She was born in what was then East Pakistan. She experienced the horrors of genocide firsthand during Pakistan's occupation of Bangladesh in 1971. Her mother and little sisters were thrown in prison camp after her father was murdered. After Bangladesh became independent, her father's remains were discovered in one of seven mass graves. He was laid to rest with full military honors in a national memorial built for him and 12 others who fell that day. Ruxana earned her MBA from Rutgers University and worked as a commercial lending officer for Citibank in New York before launching a successful business career. She was also appointed Commissioner of Asian American Affairs in Philadelphia and was elected president of the Delaware Valley Bangladesh American Association, where she served for two terms. Ruxana Haseeb is passionate about speaking out against abuse and indignities to women around the world and against religious extremism and gun violence in America. She's also the author of Shadows in the Sun, Shackles of Time, and Redemption of Red. And Ruxana is also a blogger for Huffington Post. We welcome once again to Common Threads, Ruxana Haseeb. Hello, Ruxana.
Hello, Fred. It's a pleasure to be here with you again.
Last week, we talked quite a bit about the beginnings of Bangladesh, the war with Pakistan, and the genocide that was attempted, and of course, your personal story in all of this, which is chilling, to say the least, the indignities that you and your family suffered, including, of course, the murder of your father. What I want to talk about right now, though, is the differences between what was then West Pakistan and East Pakistan and how that may have affected what Bangladesh has become today. So tell me, if you can, was there any difference in the form of Islam that was practiced in West Pakistan versus East Pakistan? How did religion affect the whole war? Also talk about the fact that Pakistan is an Islamic republic, but Bangladesh was founded as a secular society. So I'm kind of guessing that there was a difference.
You are absolutely right, Fred. There was a very stark difference between the two countries. And traditionally, people in East Bengal were Bengalis first, and they were moderate Muslims next. Bengalis, you know, we like to dance, we like to sing, we have good food, we sleep in the afternoons, and things like that. And they're very tolerant, even though in the lower economic groups, religion is practiced fervently, but it is with moderation. But in the last couple of decades, religious intolerance is seeping into Bangladesh society. And this is because of a brand of Islam that is being imported into Bangladesh by various extremist groups. And CNN lists 125 groups of extremists in Bangladesh besides the main one, Jamaat-e-Islami, and their view of Bangladesh is that Islam should be the guiding force. And these organizations recognized in 1942 as the party of Indian Muslims who was then part of India and socially and economically degraded in India. They opposed the breakup of India because they were Muslims, you know, on both sides, in India, in East Pakistan, and in West Pakistan. And when, in 1971, the breakup was happening between East and West Pakistan, they opposed it also on religious grounds alone and believed that religious unity alone should keep us together, no matter what the cultural differences were. So on the eve of Bangladesh independence, most of these leaders sought refuge in Pakistan and the Middle East countries because they sided with Pakistan, and on the eve of the independence, they were regarded as traitors to the cause. So since then, they have been flushed with a lot of cash from the Saudi nations, groups in Saudi nations and groups in Pakistan, and they have infiltrated the society in Bangladesh and started madrasas, which is the religious schools for boys in different parts of the rural Bangladesh. Now, when you are poor and hopeless, and if somebody says to you that, give me your child to come to school and I'll give them food, you go for it. It's pretty much like the Irish long times ago that went into the monasteries. So, but these children, as I understand, these boys are being groomed to become extremists. And the extremist philosophy, which has been brought to light by the murder of Avijit Roy, who was an atheist blogger. And so when he was killed, Avijit Roy was knifed in daylight coming out of a book fair with his wife. And even before this happened, another blogger was attacked and murdered. And then the people of East Pakistan came out in droves asking for justice for these bloggers. But instead, the administration decided not to take actions. And when Hafazat-e-Islam, another extremist group, it's less powerful extremist group, called for public killings of atheists and demanded that blasphemy laws should be passed after another blogger was killed in 2013. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina reacted by arresting some atheist bloggers instead. She wanted to appease the extremist elements. But that sent a very chilling message that those who hold independent views are in grave danger. And since then, writers and bloggers and freethinkers have become very vulnerable. They are being harassed, openly threatened, and killed. When Avijit Roy was murdered, and another blogger was also knifed down shortly after that in Sylhet, the place in the country that I come from, and Dhaka University girls were attacked and molested in broad daylight, and nothing happened to them. So this leads all of us to become very fearful, because we see a systematic intolerance and human rights abuses against all minorities, Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, and of course the indigenous people who inhabit the Chittagong Hill Treks, as well as secular Muslims like me and women. We see that rising. Thousands of religious minorities have been forced to flee across the borders to Malaysia and India because they are no longer comfortable in Bangladesh. And so we are afraid now, and we see it, that Bangladesh is in its way to becoming another hotbed of extremism. And for these extremist groups, anyone who opposes their philosophy of the distorted, very, very distorted view of Islam is the enemy. And that makes them very powerful because they have a philosophy. And they they are willing to die for their philosophy. They are willing to kill for their philosophy. And even though they don't have political clout, they become very powerful because of that philosophy itself. In Bangladesh, we have seen very recently that society itself has changed. There are signs about religion on the streets, which I never saw when I was growing up. And women are beginning to adorn the headscarf called the hijab. And of course, I'm not saying that anything is wrong with that. It is not the dress itself. It is the philosophy behind it. Because some women are, of course, under pressure to put on the hijab, but others are doing it voluntarily. Some might be a statement they are made, in your face, I'm a Muslim, what are you going to do about it? But there is a discernible change in Bangladesh culture. And people like me, I was born in a Muslim family, and I believe in tolerance for every religion, every person in every religion. And I will always talk to those of my friends and acquaintance who talk about religion in a very negative way. I always say that if you believe, if your faith believes that God made us all, if God doesn't have a problem with making us all, and what is your problem? Why do you have a problem? They should be allowed to worship the way they want to worship and think of God and worship God the way they want to.
So you're saying worship. That when you were growing up, that women, you would walk down the street and be crowded with men and women, you would not see a woman in a hijab?
No.
Really?
I have never seen a hijab growing up. I would never wear a hijab. I've never seen my grandmother. My grandmother, who didn't know how to read and write, she used her thumb. She made the thumb mark. And when my grandfather died, she managed a substantial farm business where during harvest time, at least 50 men came to bring the harvest, the rice harvest in. And she was there giving them directions, telling them what to do and where to sell the rice and all of that. And never a hijab. I never seen either of my grandmothers. My other grandmother, my father's mother, was a healer. And she saw people all the time. And when she died, about 500 people came to say their last goodbye. Never hijab. It was all about being good, being faithful to the faith that you were born in, and being accepting of everyone. But now, the Puritan version of an intolerant Islam is spreading in Bangladesh, and the extremist groups are infiltrating the society.
Let me break in real quickly to let people know that you're listening to WGVU-FM. This is Common Threads. My name is Fred Stella, and I'm speaking with Ruxana Haseeb. That's so fascinating. I just assumed that in a country like East Pakistan then, Bangladesh now, that you would see a mix. For instance, I don't know if have you been to Istanbul at all?
Yes, I have.
Okay. What fascinated me about being in Turkey, and Istanbul in particular, because it's such a large cosmopolitan area, that I would see 5, 6, 7 women walking down the street together. So you knew that they were friends. They'd be talking amongst themselves. 3 or 4 would have hijabs, and the others wouldn't. So it wasn't an us and them dynamic. It was, I choose to wear the hijab. I choose not to wear the hijab, and that's a personal thing. So let's be friends. Go on.
Absolutely, Fred. I agree, and I am in no way diminishing the choice of wearing a hijab. I am only talking about the changes that are there in Bangladesh now, which were not there before when I was growing up. And I am only concerned about the reason for the choices. If the reason for the choice is to wear a hijab because you choose to wear it, it's fine. If there is a dangerous philosophy behind it, then I am a little concerned and fearful. When I was in school, I went to schools modeled according to the British education system, and it was co-education, boys and girls, and we all wore uniforms and dresses, and that was fine. In college and universities, men and women, of course, we have different dorm room, different common rooms for women, and which we liked because you want to be separated, but the classes were there, never, not even one single hijab. And now you go, and 50% of the girls are wearing the hijab. But it is not that much of the hijab. People are talking about religion a lot more. It is becoming everywhere a lot more us against them instead of us together in a world where we can live harmoniously and worship in whichever manner that we want to. And that is the only problem that I am pointing out.
Sure. And I've read that back in your day, you had Christian friends, you had Hindu friends, along with your Muslim friends, and there really was more of a pluralistic understanding. Am I correct?
Absolutely. In fact, I graduated from Holy Cross College in Dhaka, Bangladesh. I did my bachelor's there, and it was run by the American nuns. And we had a lot of Christian friends. I had four roommates, I was the fifth girl, four of them were Christians. And I was the only Muslim in that room, and there was never any difference. We didn't feel any difference. And now we tend to isolate ourselves, and that is the danger here.
Certainly. And as you mentioned before, many people who are not Muslim or are minority Muslims are moving out because they fear for their lives.
It is the non-Muslims. It's they feel threatened. Hindus, Christians, Buddhists, they feel threatened. I've been talking to some friends who were talking about relatives of theirs. They want to move away because of the changes that they are seeing. And society is changing so fast, everybody is fearful. And you know, in Bangladesh, one good thing happened after we broke away from Pakistan in 1971, that there is a growth of the garment industries in Bangladesh. Now, Bangladesh has become the second largest exporter of ready-made garments all over the world. China is, of course, the top, and we are the second. And 95% of this industry is run by women. Women work there, they sew, they sort, they pack, they do that. And these women who had no other choices before in the world, in their world before, they could be domestic servants or eke out a living doing odds and ends here and there, washing clothes, sweeping up, being sweepers and washerwomen. They have now dignity, and which comes with the fact that they are economically independent. So if, you see, whenever religious extremism comes in, for some reason, women become the target. And I have never understood that. Being a woman, I've never understood that because we are the mothers. We are your mothers, your daughters, your wives, your sisters. Why put us behind closed doors? And, you know, in Saudi Arabia, women can't even walk alone. They have to have a male relative, not just a male man person, male relative to accompany them. So women are always subjugated when it comes to extremism.
So you're
and these women who work in the garment factories, who are earn billions of foreign exchange, are going to be most definitely affected because religious extremism can put them out of business, surely, because they're going to have to stay behind closed doors and in hijab and in parda.
I understand that there is a movement to get a resolution here in the United States government to condemn the movement, the extremist Islamic movement that is happening in Bangladesh, and that this resolution is aimed at Jamaat-e-Islami, which you've mentioned before. Now, this is what surprised me. I understood at the briefing, I mentioned last week that I was at a briefing in D.C. where I met you, about this very challenging time for Bangladesh. And it was mentioned that this extremist group is actually attempting to influence our Congress because they've hired lobbyists to do this.
Well, they're very powerful. They have a lot of money, and I wouldn't be surprised. Well, there is a resolution that is coming up and that they are working on to declare Jamaat-e-Islami as an extremist group. However, this would be only the beginning because CNN lists 125 groups of extremists in Bangladesh besides Jamaat-e-Islami. It would be a good thing to put them on notice. And I suppose if they are able to do that, the administration, Bangladesh administration, Sheikh Hasina, the prime minister, would also be put on notice that she is negotiating or being cowered down by extremist group Jamaat-e-Islami. So that would be a good thing.
How is it, if you're speaking to an American citizen who is very far removed from this whole scene, has no connection to South Asia, was there anything you could say to them to say, hey, you know what, this affects you. How does this affect the average American who lives a world away from Bangladesh?
Well, here's how. From a positive point of view, I have always believed that if anyone in any part of the world is in pain or trouble, it affects us because as human beings, it is our moral responsibility to reach out and be of assistance. It is not just about us living well, having the two cars in the driveway. We as affluent American citizens have to help. And Americans have helped whenever there is a disaster in the world. Just like the Bangladesh concert that I always talk about. George Harrison and the Bangladesh concert raised $12 million to help the Bangladeshis. Just like that, when extremism happens anywhere in the world, it will affect the common American. It might not affect him in his own home, in our own home as Americans, but it will affect when you travel. It will affect when a relative travels. It will affect, look at the other extremist groups like ISIS. They have taken our journalists and beheaded them in horrific, horrific ways. This horror that will increase if we do not step up and try and contain it will affect every life in the world, not just American lives. And of course, as Americans, we feel sometimes that none of this affects us, but it does. We can see that from the news, from day-to-day affairs, from what is happening in Pakistan, from what is happening in Afghanistan, that it does affect us. The Taliban in Swat Valley, where Malala Yousafzai comes from, a remarkable young woman who fought them. And it has affected the world, and it has because she survived, she is such a big voice in the world. So in every way, our safety is an issue, or it is our moral sense of being is an issue, our religious freedom is an issue. I believe that everyone should be able to live and worship the way they want to live and worship, so long it doesn't affect the other person. So it's all about tolerance and acceptance.
I'm assuming that your blog on the Huffington Post, you address this issue on a regular basis. Is that correct?
I write, the Huffington Post, the thing I have is I write about women's rights, I write about voter rights, I write about extremism, Malala Yousafzai. So whatever tickles my fancy, I write. And I write when I want to. So if you just go under my name, Rukhsana Haseeb, you will see some of my earlier blogs.
And that is Haseeb.
Yes.
Okay. Rukhsana, it has been wonderful having you here this week and last week as well. And you have brought some very powerful, powerful images to our attention. And I hope that we as a country stand up and do the right thing here.
I thank you so much, Fred, for giving me this opportunity to speak, because I'm one of the fortunate ones who have a voice. As a person, and of course as a woman, and not many of us do. I'm so happy that you gave me an opportunity to say my piece, because I have a voice. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. You've been listening to Common Threads here on WGVU-FM. I'm Fred Stella. Rukhsana Haseeb has been our guest. You can catch her at Huffington Post. And please join us again next week here on Common Threads.